Okay, we're talking to Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman today to give without expecting anything in return, to serve all people regardless, to save lives and give and offer other people maybe just a chance at hope. This is what drives the world-renowned Give to the Givers Foundation, a lifeline for people from all walks of life since its inception on August the 6th, 1992. He has admired, respected across the globe, and just recently, last week, closer to home, the University of the Western Cape also honored him. The institution conferred an honorary doctorate on Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman for his philanthropic efforts. The doctor joins us via Zoom. Welcome, Dr. Suleiman. It's great to have you.
Good morning, Clarence. Thank you very much for having me on your show.
Thank you. We're not going to talk about, you know, you and your superhuman efforts with your team to bring relief to people in the world and in the country. We just want to find out about Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman today. And we're going to start at the start. We want you to take us back to Potchefstroom. Tell us about your young days and how you know, what was put in place for you to be this amazing human being that that you are today.
Coming from a small town, it is a sense of community. On the one side, the grandfather, his children, brothers and sisters, their wives or her husbands, and the children all lived in the same yard. The business was in the front and the homes were in the back. It was one, you know, communal family. Everybody assisted each other. Everybody did things together. When big days of celebration came during the religious time, everybody were together. But it was beyond that. Not only were individual families community, the whole community was community. So if somebody had a wedding, even if you were not invited, you would go and help. If somebody was sick, you would make food or visit the person in the hospital. If somebody passes on, everybody comes to the funeral. And nobody gets offended if the person is not invited, because you can't invite the whole town, obviously. And there was values. There were, you know, everybody made sure that if anybody's child is going out of line, that the parents were told, nobody took offense, and we looked after each other in that way. That was from a personal point of view. From a society point of view, we had a business. We still have it up to today. My great-grandfather was in a shop. My grandfather joined him. My father and his brother and sisters joined him. I eventually worked with them during school days. And we had people, mostly Black community and some Afrikaner people around the area that used to shop from us. It was mostly a credit accounts business. And it was there that I learned a lot from my family. A customer would buy very well, pay very well, and suddenly there was a problem. And my grandfather would say, they've been supporting us for such a long time. Give them the goods. They're probably never going to pay us again. It doesn't matter. The same family would come back and say, we need money for funeral. Somebody has passed on. And my grandfather would say the same thing. They've supported us. Their family's going to support us. Gave them the money for the funeral. They're probably not going to get it back. And it was those kind of values that started in that hometown, you know, that I learned. And one final point. I became very interested in becoming a doctor, because the doctor who actually delivered me, you know, in Potchefstroom, was a guy who never worried about doing house calls, came any part of the day or night, smiled every time. Professional doctor, a Professor Ismail Hafiji, who passed on last year. He left Potchefstroom, came to Durban, became a pediatrician, a professor teaching in the department. He was an example of professionalism from the medical point of view. And he was also a very religious man. In Ramadan, when we have to stand in the mosque for 30 nights and pray extra, we have to know the Quran. We're not as some, you got to know the Quran by mind, by heart. And this man used to read that, perform that prayer in Ramadan. So he was a religious man in Ramadan and a spiritual doctor the rest of the year. And he inspired me to become a doctor at a very young age.
We're getting to find out more about Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman on the line, and it's our Let's Talk feature. So we talk to the person and find out more about the person. You talk about values. Values has come through consistently in that opening little gambit there. You talk about the community's roles in fostering those values and the family's roles in fostering those values. Clearly a close-knit community in Potchefstroom. A family run a business, you say, through generations. Why did you break that link? And you say that you've become a medical doctor because of the medical doctor in Potchefstroom. Again, helping people. A thread coming through there, Dr. Suleiman.
Yes, you know, it was consistency in helping people. The relationship didn't break. I realized that staying in a shop is not for me, you know. And I was very keen on doing medicine. But my mother and father got separated, you know, at a young age. My mother went moved back to Durban, where she was from originally. And in grade 9 or standard 7 in those days, in 1974, I moved to Durban, you know, and did standard 7 in Durban and finished matric there in 78 in Sastry College. And I knew that I wanted to get into the medical school in Durban because that's what I wanted to do. And my father had no objection about that. He was quite happy and encouraged that I was going to do that. He said, you know what, it's good to have a profession. And there was another a cousin, an uncle, who was also a doctor in the family. So, and so healing and serving people. Well, at the first part, of course, it was about being a doctor, just to have this profession of being a doctor, knowing medicine. And with that came the desire to help people. And my mother on her own, when she separated from my father, she set up an employment bureau. And she said, the best thing you can give people is dignity. And the best way to do that is to find jobs for people. So she set up a very successful employment bureau, finding lots of people jobs in lots of different companies. It was, in that time, it was a great kind of thing to do. And then she would say, outside the business, that we should go out and seek out people who are hungry. Even if we can only afford one food parcel or two or three, let's take it and go out. So very so often, she would go out and help, and I would go with her to give food parcels. So it was a continuation of what I had learned in Potchefstroom.
Yeah, and you know, I credit you and I hold you for your superhuman effort in respect of strife in this country and beyond. And you nearly dismiss it. You sound as if you relate to this as just the calling of your religion as well. Tell us about that relationship, your religious impact on your life and, of course, direction.
Well, when I spoke about values, it comes from religion, you know. Well, specifically my religion, I'm talking about myself. I can't talk about others. Everybody's sure. Got their own values.
Sure.
But from my one itself specifically, you know, it tells you very clearly that you must pray. But it gives a very strong warning that God is not in need of your prayer if you can't do neighborly needs. In other words, if you can't serve the poor, you can't help the widow, you can't help the neighbor, you can't help anybody in society itself, don't waste your time. Your prayer is not important. The essence of prayer is to prepare the soul and the mind for service to people unconditionally. That's our teaching. But it got amplified in a huge way when I met a spiritual teacher on the 6th of August, 1992 in Turkey. I met him the year before that. But when I went back in 1992, that Thursday night, after a prayer session, he looks me in the eye and he looks heavenwards. And in fluent Turkish, I don't speak Turkish, but I understood everything that he said in Turkish. He said, my son, I'm not asking you, I'm instructing you to form an organization. The name in Arabic will be Waqful Waqifin, translated, gift of the givers. You will serve all people of all races, all religions, all colors, all classes, all cultures, of any geographical location and of any political affiliation, but you will serve them unconditionally, not expecting anything in return. This is an instruction for you for the rest of your life. Serve people with love, kindness, compassion, and mercy. And remember, the dignity of man is foremost. And remember, my son, that whatever you do is done through you and not by you. I asked him, how come when you speak Turkish, I understand, and other people speak Turkish, I don't understand? He said, my son, when the hearts connect and the souls connect, the words become understandable. I asked him, what exactly am I supposed to do? He told me one line. You will know. For 30 years, I do know. What to do, how to do, what to touch, what not to touch, how to intervene and how not to intervene.
Wow. And you've reconciled that moment, nearly prophetic moment in Turkey
in 1992.
You've reconciled it as an instruction nearly from the divine.
Yes, it is in divine because it's a place where spiritual leader, we have what is called a Sufi order. The link goes up to the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. So it's a continuation of, it's an extension of what the Prophet of Islam taught, peace be upon him. And that teaching just filters down to people who came after him and after him and after him into Turkey and every other part of the world. And it was just a continuation of a teaching where you understand the spirit of the law rather than the letter of the law. Where the spirit of the law teaches you love, compassion, kindness, and mercy that overrides every other fact. So if somebody has hurt you, it says, okay, you know, let's be forgiving, let's be merciful, give the person a chance. You let the law allows you to get your day back or what it tells you, you can get back what happened to you, but of equal intensity, not more, not worse, but it's better for you to forgive. So those are the kind of teachings that you learn, and you always try to say, okay, maybe what happened to you, give the person a chance, and maybe they will get better and they'll improve. And so often that happens, where goodness starts coming out from somebody who's maybe hurt you or caused, offended you, and that person becomes an intimate friend or somebody that changes society or becomes a great human being.
An instruction from the divine, a conduit of sorts. So therefore, you would always be able to meet the challenge commensurately, because you would be resourced sufficiently without you knowing where from to deliver on the needs of the time.
Hey, you're sounding like the spiritual teacher himself.
I've been to a great Sufi teacher in Lusaka who did teach me a little bit.
Hey, the teacher said, my son, there'll be a lot of challenges, but you will always succeed. My son, you will never look for money. People will come and find you. As a policy, we don't have fundraisers. You know, people come to us from all over. He said they'll come to you from all over the world. They come from all over the world. He said they'll look for you from all over the world. They look for me from all over the world. In everything he said, you will be guided. But remember, the most important teaching that I told you, whatever you do is done through you and not by you. There's no place for ego. The day the ego comes in, the gift is gone.
You're talking about being a doctor also as nearly a calling and then giving it up. Was it this instruction that made you give up the medical profession?
Well, he didn't ask you to give up the medical profession. But when I was in the first projects I did immediately, I responded to the civil war in Bosnia. And that kept me busy from 92 to 95. Mm. One day my wife phones me in June 1994, 30th June, and I'm in Bosnia. And she says, you know what, this is not going to work. People come here all the time. They wait for you. The children are sick for 2 to 3 weeks. They don't want to go to anybody else. They don't want to see your locums. I think you should close the practice. You can either do the practice or you do gift of because you can't do both. It was both a professional. And I said, it's not even a decision, because the teacher gave me instruction for the rest of my life. You know, the instruction for the rest of my life is to serve people. So I told her, shut it. And that same day, on 30th June 1994, she shut all three surgeries that I had.
But you've employed your skills, obviously, in the new purpose that you've been instructed into.
Well, if I wasn't a doctor, I wouldn't be able to do all the things that I do. It's the medical skills. And, you know, medicine is common sense. The physiology, the anatomy, everything's the same. You know, so, and you apply, like in COVID, we didn't do COVID, but you know the type of processes involved, how to set up hospitals. And you don't have to know everything. You just need people in your team who are skilled and tell you, okay, the newest advancements are this. Look, I don't practice medicine since 94, but they will tell you, I'll say, okay, what's the way to combat certain things? They'll say this, that, the other. I'll go check up about it. I'll go visit it. I'll go see the site. I'll go experiment and find out. Yes, this makes practical sense to me. And like that, I got a plethora of people on my side, professors, you know, heads of department, highly skilled medical personnel, and all of them can give you excellent advice. And we put it together. And of course, how to build hospitals. That's the medical part. But it's, of course, the logistics part, the building, the construction, the people that you use, the diplomacy, and all those additional skills which have developed over the years. So all that together with the medical skills is crucial to do, especially the medical interventions.
There's one little anomaly that you need to just kind of sort out for us. You did feel that politics could be your calling in 1994. And we were talking this morning, Lester and I were talking, and Lester had mentioned that it's a good thing that you failed dismally there in terms of not getting the necessary votes for you to have to go to politics. But you did feel that maybe there was a role you could play there as well.
No, the problem with that is my name is given as a leader of the party. I wasn't even in the country at that point.
Okay.
And I was already registered my name without me being asked. And when I came back, they said they can't remove it. I'm already registered as a leader of the party. But I told them I know nothing about politics. I'm not interested in politics. This is something that I don't want to do. And, you know, they insisted now you are known. I mean, it's only 2 years that I was already known post-Gift of the Givers.
Sure.
And I said, no, I don't want this. And I sadly prayed that we win no seats. And to me, the greatest joy happened when we didn't get any seats, you know. it was the happiest moment of my life.
I tell you, we were celebrating that this morning in Reflection. I was telling everybody about you popping by for us to have this conversation. And the AMP back in the day is what you were representing. But you say that you weren't even around. You didn't approve to be the leader of that party that they said you were. Okay.
I was never involved in that kind of stuff, you know. And I said, you know what, you need people who are in the movement, who are in politics, who knew the struggles, you knew how to relate. And I didn't know about all those kind of things, you know, coming from Potsdam, I was way behind. So, you know, I didn't know that. But developing the humanitarian stuff, I mean, that skill was just growing and growing and growing. And I don't want to destroy something that was developing in a strong way.
Well, that is my segue into the next question. And the question is, people are touting you for president of South Africa. We need great leadership of the values base that you represent. Just tell me, do you think that politics could be a thing for you in the future? Or is politics even a means of solving this country's problems?
Yes, politics is a means of solving. Not politics is future for me, no. But politics is a means to solve the problems of the country, because in the past, you know, if you have the right leadership, and I come back to the same thing, values, but it's three other categories: spirituality, morality, values, and ethics. We need that in government, wherever the person is. Government is just a name. It's people that make up government. So within the corporate world, in the religious sector, in the NGO sector, in society, and in government, or wherever it runs these things, the individuals make up the system. And if individuals have these kind of qualities, yes, you can make a huge difference. You don't have to worry about money being stolen or wasted, because your inner being, your inner soul will talk to you and make you do the right things in the right way possible. So, yes, it has a role to play. Me getting involved? No. In 95, after that thing of the ANP, I spoke to the spiritual teacher and I said, this is what happened. And he said, my son, you will never get involved in politics. You'll never be involved in government, but you will always work with government. And for 30 years, we've been doing that. We've been working with government. We fight. We have a good fight in the day. And at night, we're friends again, you know, and we talk about things that are not right and has to be fixed up. Yes, so I really appreciate the fact that people want me to stand as president. But you get caught up in the bureaucracy, in the red tape, in the system. You can't make a decision in 5 seconds like what I can do, being outside government, you know. And that's why I feel I can serve the country greater from outside, because the advantage of that is I don't follow rules. I break the rules, I do what's necessary, I get the things done, and people just don't say anything.
You spoke about a spiritual poverty, and that is really at the heart of our country's issues, I concur. But how do we change that around? Because everything else comes in the wake of that spiritual poverty, the morality issues that you're confronting. How do we turn things around?
And we have to go back to the values of Potsdam. The story of Potsdam, you know, We talk about fighting criminality, but if there's no criminals, there's no criminality to fight. And we need to go back to that process. To go back to the prevention rather than dealing with the issue afterwards. And it goes back to us being one big community, where neighbors, church people, schools, everybody start defining values and guiding our kids to those values. And once those kids grow up with those right values, but you can't tell them, do this when you are a very bad example yourself. So the parents and the society has got to be an example for the kids to follow. It was done before. It was done hundreds of years and hundreds of times. We just need to go back. Your child is my child. In the old days, if your child was naughty and your neighbor came and said, oh, your child did this, that, and the other, the neighbor said, give him one smack. Today, they'll talk about corporal punishment, it's not correct. But it wasn't meant in that way. It was meant to put him straight, whatever you have to do. Today, you tell your neighbor your child is naughty, they tell you, shut up, got nothing to do with you, mind your own business. You know, that's what they will tell you. The ego overrides everything else. And eventually, when a child is destroyed, you cry, it's too late. So we need to go back and say, you know what? Kill the ego. Let's build a sense of community.
We need to kill the ego. Yes. People are going to say it's a pipe dream to go back for each child is my child. It takes a village to raise a child. Those kind of principles on which our generations were raised. People say it's a pipe dream. People are too insular.
Go to the new generation. The new generation doesn't know about color. They don't know about black and white. You tell them about apartheid, they look at you like you're talking some, you know, alien language. They have no idea what you're talking about. With the elderly people, you can't change their minds. They're fixed. But the new generation, you can bring those values in and say, look, forget it. Just write off 12 years and start from before that, 15 years, from preschool, 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds, and let's start in the values there. They will set an example and the bigger kids will follow eventually. So let's start with what's easy. Not try to change somebody's mind is already set. Mold a new mind and it can be done.
What does your guru out there in Turkey say about the future? Is it something to look forward to?
We never spoke about that. You know, you just take life as it comes, and that's, you know, you and you respond to life as it goes along. But we always have to be positive. We always got to have hope, that because in essence, humanity has more good than evil in it, and good always overrides evil. And quite often, well, he says this. He says, "You see, when somebody's doing bad things, don't run the person down. Don't keep saying you're bad, you're bad, you're bad. Look for the one good that that bad person in inverted commas is doing." And said, you know, you did this good. Okay. You did this good. And as you do that, you change the personality and the spiritual well-being of that person. And eventually, the good within the person overrides the bad. That is power of spirituality.
You are an absolute inspiration. We thank you for this opportunity to really dig down into the life and person that is Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman. Thank you for the work that you do, Doc. You are appreciated by so very many people around this country and around the world. Thank you for you. And we can never say enough of that.
Thanks, Clarence. And thanks to your station. You guys always give us good coverage. We appreciate that. And, you know, to everybody, let's have a great festive season and let's start fixing the country together.